All right, welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by CFB Talk Daily. Today is Friday, November 22nd, and today we have on a guest with us. He is the host of Tide Talk Podcast, Stacey Blackwood. Thank you for coming on, Stacey.
Hey, guys. I appreciate y'all having me.
Oh, not a problem. If you guys haven't, head over to them, listen to their show, especially if you're an SEC guy down in Alabama. You definitely want to tune into their stuff. So first, I told them, typical rundown, what we normally do. So we're going to talk about the games last week. So last week, we'll start with Penn State. Obviously, playing a little closer than they probably should have against Indiana. Stace, so let's start off with this one. If you caught any of that game, what really caught your eye?
Nothing really caught my eye other than I think Indiana's probably a little bit underrated nationally. I mean, they've played really well this season. And, they got a good offense, and I just think that, Penn State might have got caught looking ahead a little bit to this week against Ohio State, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But it didn't really surprise me, I don't guess. I kind of figured Indiana would hang with them. Like I said, they got a good offensive team, and, they've really kind of flew under the radar this season. I think they've played pretty good football. So no, it didn't really surprise me or catch me off guard.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I think Indiana, Windiana, some people call them. John always brings that up. Yeah, John always brings that up. They're they're always underlooked. I mean, they have seven. They're 7-3. You don't get seven wins on accident. Penn State might have just been looking forward, like, all right, this is Indiana. Historically, everyone rolls over them. You know, let's just start prepping for the bigger game. And then they kind of got caught off guard, closer than it should have been. But I mean, end of the day, you still pulled out a win. That's what's most important for them right now. What about you, John?
We should go into I don't really have much to say other than what you guys just said, except I think Sean Clifford is like the weak spot of the Penn State offense.
I will agree.
It took me a while to realize that. I think we should head to the SEC, though, and talk about the biggest news. Stacey, I'm sure you want to avoid this topic, but...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's obviously been a tough week here in Alabama. I think the fans have probably taken it worse than what Tua has taken it. That's, of course, the hip injury to Tua Tagovailoa in the Mississippi State game. But, like I said, you see the videos that's gone viral of him, dancing and singing in the hospital bed. Uh-huh. He just kind of has that upbeat personality. Everything's always positive. And I think that's probably what gravitated Alabama fans to him so much. He's kind of different than what, Jalen Hurts was. Jalen Hurts is, he's stoic. He doesn't really have much to say. He hardly smiles. He has a lot of Nick Saban in him, really.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I with think the rat that's poison.
I think what gravitated Alabama fans to, other than his ability to throw a football and lead a football team, is just his personality. And, you hate to see that injury happen to anybody, especially somebody that's playing as well as Tua has. And, the last couple of seasons have been rough as far as injuries, especially in the lower body. He had one ankle operated on last season after the SEC championship game. Then the other ankle he had it just a couple of weeks ago. So it's just been one thing after another for Tua, and you hate to see it because the talent is there, and he does such a good job of distributing the ball to all his weapons. And you just hate to see that. And, really for Alabama, though, it's next man up, and it's Mac Jones' show now. So kind of see what he's made of here in a couple of weeks when they played Auburn in Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, so what do you, just talking about – actually, I'm going to backtrack for a second. When you talked about Tua, it kind of reminded me – I'm an Oregon fan. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Mariota.
Yeah.
In a way, how they have that same, like their energy is almost contagious to the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
So, no one wants to see anything happen to them at all.
Yeah, and I think it even went further than just the Alabama fan base. I mean, there's been a lot of Auburn fans and LSU fans and just SEC fans down here. They're kind of devastated by the injury as well, just because of, obviously everybody respects a great football player, and Tua is obviously that. But, they kind of saw what kind of person Tua was. He's a man of faith, and he just has that glowing personality. I don't know how else to put it. And I think a lot of fans gravitated towards that, and it didn't necessarily have to be Alabama fans.
you know, I'll ask you this regarding just the Tua injury real quick. So as a fan, how do you look at the situation? Because, I mean, if it was against, you know, say this happened, you know, against LSU when they're making a comeback in a game that was close, you know, do you look at that injury differently than any game against Mississippi State where you probably shouldn't have been playing at that point? Like, do you have any of those second doubts in your head?
Not really. You know, it's, I don't want to think that way because anybody could get injured on any given play. I mean, it could easily have happened against LSU late in that game, or it could have waited and happened the first series against Western Carolina this week. So you never want to think about a player getting injured, and you don't want to, as a coach, like in Nick Saban's situation, you don't ever want to coach trying to prevent an injury. Obviously, you don't want anybody to get injured, but you can't allow that kind of mindset to make decisions for you as far as, you know, when you're going to play somebody. And, you know, like Saban said, he was trying to get him a little practice run in the 2-minute drill. And truthfully, Tua, I mean, you know, just watching it over and over again, he truthfully just held onto the ball a little bit too long on that play. He should have just threw the ball away, and it may have been avoided. But, you know, injuries happen. That's part of football. And unfortunately, they happen to Tua quite a bit, especially in the lower body. And it's just frustrating because as an Alabama fan, we've yet to see him play a complete season. And it's probably not going to happen, as I imagine he's still going to go out to the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think as much as, like, I mean, you always want a great quarterback to stay. I think if he does enter the NFL draft, you really can't. He's just looking out for himself, you know?
Right.
All right, yeah. So one other thing I want to talk about with Alabama quick is, did you see the headline where Nick Saban said he only loves about 5 players as a person?
Yeah, I think I was watching the press conference actually when he said it. And I think what he was really trying to say is that there's been a handful of guys that's come through there that he's just really loved to coach, as, you know, as a player and then also as a person. I don't know who those other guys are, but
that's what I was going to ask, if you wanted to speculate on who they
were. I would imagine somebody like maybe a Julio or a Mark Ingram, because I think, and especially somebody like Julio. I mean, Julio committed to Alabama when Alabama was 6-6, and, you know, he was arguably one of the top players in the entire country. And, you know, he committed to Saban and what Saban was trying to build on at Alabama. And I think that kind of showed Saban what kind of personality Julio has. And I think those Saban and Julio kind of have the same type of personality. So I could kind of see somebody like that. It always seemed like Saban and A.J. McCarron had a really good bond. It's hard to really – maybe Minkah Fitzpatrick is another one.
That's who I had him on my list.
Yeah.
I had Minkah.
Yeah, I think he's probably definitely up there as well. But yeah, I'm surprised nobody there at the press conference asked him who the other players were. Not that he would have told, but I'm surprised that nobody asked.
He wouldn't have said it.
Yeah,
he would have snapped on another reporter.
So my list was actually Julio Jones.
I ain't gonna answer. Just quit asking.
So my list was Jalen Hurts, Mark Ingram, Minkah, Julio, and Tua.
Yeah, I can see all those guys. You obviously seen after the SEC championship game last year when, you know, Jalen come in after Tua got hurt and led the comeback. You know, Saban was pretty much in tears in the post game. You know, bragging on Jalen and what he had been through that entire season and sticking with Alabama. You could tell that really made an impact on Saban. So, I imagine that Jalen Hurts is also, you know, among those guys.
Yeah. All right, so Matt, now you can move on to your next game.
Yeah, so now we'll move on to a team that I'm betting Alabama fans are waiting to get to. So we'll talk about the Georgia-Auburn game. Georgia keeping their chances alive with the one loss, beating Auburn 21-14. So I guess more of the bigger picture, Stacey, how are you feeling against when you guys match up against Auburn? Because I feel like most situations it goes to, you know, you are where your record says you are, but Auburn has the toughest schedule in the country, and I think they've performed well enough to, you know, I don't think it's beyond reasonable doubt that they may end up, you know, winning that game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first of all, they have a really good defense, and when you have a really good defense, you're going to be in every game. And that defense kept them in the game against Georgia. I seen a stat, and my numbers are going to be a little off, but you'll get the point. That on Georgia's 3 scoring possessions, I believe they had like 200 yards of offense. And on their 12 other possessions, they only had 50 yards of offense. So other than three possessions in that game, Auburn completely shut down that Georgia offense, which really isn't saying, I mean, saying much. Georgia has DeAndre Swift, and other than that, they don't have anybody explosive on that team. So their offense isn't what Alabama's offense is. I believe even with Mac Jones at quarterback, with the weapons on the outside like Ruggs and Judy and Smitty and, you know, all those guys, they have plenty of weapons for Mac Jones to throw the ball to. But Auburn's weak point is obviously their offense. You know, they got the win to start the season against Oregon. And I know they got the win, but Oregon really outplayed them for most of that game. And, you know, Auburn hit that lucky pass, yeah. I mean, to win the game. And if they didn't have that win, I'm not sure that, you know, really they have any respect whatsoever, because – I mean, that's really all they have to hang their hat on right now. I know they beat Texas A&M, which is, I think they're like a three-loss team right now. But, you know, it's just their offense is so anemic that with Bo Nix at quarterback that, you know, that it's – I just – even with Alabama's struggles on defense this year, I don't see them being able to put enough points on the board to beat Alabama. But as far as the Georgia game, I thought they did – they played really well late in that game on offense, but it had a lot to do with the way Georgia was playing defense. Georgia played straight man-to-man coverage all game long until they got up 21 to, I guess it was 21-7, and or 21, it was 21-0. It was 21-0, and then they went to zone, and Auburn started making plays, and by that time, Auburn had got so much momentum that even when Georgia switched back to man, their offense was rolling, and Georgia was playing on their heels on the defensive side. But Auburn's got a really good defensive front. Derrick Brown is, I mean, you could make an argument that, you know, him and somebody like Chase Young are, you know, could, you know, some of the best players in college football. He is a dominant force in the middle of that defensive line.
Yeah, so I'm an Oregon fan. I said that earlier. So, see, I got a good look at Auburn week one. And like you said, their defensive front, it's nasty. There's nothing. Derrick Brown, Big Cat Bryant, I think he's a D tackle for them. You know, they're really good. I think one thing with Auburn's offense that really is holding them back this year is Anthony Schwartz, the receiver. He's been pretty banged up all year, and I feel like that's holding them back a lot.
Yeah, they Schwartz is a really good playmaker for those guys, but I don't, you know, and he has been banged up, but they don't do enough to involve him in the offense, and that's really surprising because, you know, Gus Malzahn, when he was just an offensive coordinator, I mean, he was causing defensive troubles in the SEC. And I don't know, ever since he's been the head coach at Auburn, it just seems to be a little different. And a lot of that has to do with quarterback play, but a lot of that also has to do with scheme. And, you know, they don't really give the ball to guys. You know, Schwartz needs to touch the ball 10 to 15 times a game, and I would be surprised if he averages 5 touches a game, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think he only has, like, because we looked at Auburn's, like, team stats last week for a different reason, but I think he had, like, 43 catches on the year, which is, like, it's not great.
Yeah.
So, I know John said he was a Oregon fan, but we're from New Jersey, so we are Rutgers fans. So we will talk about Rutgers a little bit because
about anemic offense.
Yeah, you want to talk about it. Yeah, you want to talk about anemic offenses that can't get things done. We'll start with Rutgers. But no, seriously, I mean, this week against Ohio State actually didn't look as bad as I expected. I'm sure you didn't watch any of that, Stacey.
I didn't see that.
Not many people did.
There's probably me, John, and our friend Trevor were probably the only ones watching it. But I will say they actually looked better than I expected. Like I said, they put up 21 points against Ohio State, even though it was against their third strings, probably. I went into work in the middle of the game, so I didn't catch the second half. But I will, I'm something to build on, you know, some kind of confidence to have. Got to find confidence wherever you can get it with Rutgers right now.
Right. Hey, have they hired a coach? I don't know if I've missed it or not.
No, so if not. So basically, I'll give you the quick rundown what's going on. Greg Schiano originally wanted like a new facility, completely football only, and they ended up counteroffering, and he agreed to the counteroffer, but he wants more salary. So the AD and Schiano now have to come to a deal that the AD can take to the Board of Governors from the state because it has to go through the state because it's a public university.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, they have to find some kind of ground where Hobbs, the AD, can realistically go to the state and say, here's our offer, it's fair, and the state has to, it has to be a majority vote.
Okay. Are y'all okay with Shiano?
And don't get us started. John is so...
I asked that because I was listening to y'all one day, and y'all are going at it over Craig Shiano.
John is so one side, and I'm the complete other side. Me and John agree on a lot of things. Like, probably 90% of things when we do things on the show, it's me and John have the same opinions. But when we don't agree, it's like complete opposites. And this is one of those times. Sometimes we'll disagree, and it'll be, all right, I see what you're saying. I get that. This one, there is no, I get what you're saying. When it comes to Greg Schiano,
making the same mistake twice is just negligence.
There's no point in getting into it right now.
I had to bring it up.
So instead, what we'll talk about is probably who Stacy has some big hate towards right now is the Tigers down at LSU. They put up 58 points against Ole Miss this week, but also gave up 37. And that game doesn't look very close, but the game was a lot closer than the score shows. The only thing I really want to point out in this game is I've said it before and I'll say it again. This is another week where LSU shows that they're pretty inept on defense. I mean, let me look in net yards. I can see Ole Miss had 400 rushing yards, which, you know, you think of LSU historically, they're a team which was anemic offensively but got it done defensively. But now it's like completely flip-flopped.
Yeah.
The Joe Brady effect.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and a lot of people, like Alabama's defense the last couple of years is not what it used to be. But I think a lot of it has to do with the style of offense that teams play now. And then on the reverse of that, the style of offense that Alabama plays, they're no longer 3 yards in a cloud of dust. They're ripping it down the field and, you know, scoring in 2 minutes. So the defense, not only do they not have a lot of time to rest, but they don't have a time to kind of regroup on the sideline with their position coaches and the defensive coordinator and kind of look at what they've messed up on the last series and what they can do next to try to improve. So it's just it's a domino effect on the defensive side of the ball. To me though, it is concerning to give up 402 rushing yards. Passing yards is one thing, because if you want to let somebody throw the ball 40, 50 times, they're going to get some passing yards on you, but you got to be able to stop the run better than that. But I'll vouch for this, that John Rhys Plumlee, the quarterback for Ole Miss, he's not very big, but that dude is fast. I don't know if y'all seen any of the highlights.
Yeah, he does move well.
Man, he's running away from LSU DBs.
He had 204 rushing yards last week.
Right. So, but that is a little concerning, 402 yards on the ground at 9.1 yards per carry average. So that is a little troubling to see.
Yeah, and we saw LSU kind of have this problem against, I believe it was Mississippi State. So the state of Mississippi runs on LSU pretty well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we brought this up, like, even with, like, talking about them in the playoffs, you know, how they're going to fare against teams like that. Because they're, you know, Ohio State and Clemson are two teams that like to put the ball on the ground.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Ohio State.
We gotta wonder, like, man, like, how are they going to defend against that?
If you're, right, like, you know, it's,
and Fields will go to the air too, just as well as he keeps it on the ground.
Yeah, you know, from watching the football so far this season, it seems like to me, Ohio State may be the most complete team. Now that doesn't mean they're the best team, but like as far as, you know, across the board, they do seem like they're the most complete team. But LSU's offense is Joe Burrow is in a groove right now that's just. There's not much you can do about it. And I do understand the concerns for their defense, and I can see Ohio State or Clemson. The truth is the top three teams, it's a toss-up in my opinion. I mean, I don't really care how they have them ordered, because I think either of those teams could win against the other teams on any given day. That's how close I think it is right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Anything you want to add, John?
I just think that Ohio State is probably the best team in the country. I know Clemson's undefeated, but I'm still not sold on them this year. I think they've regressed in a lot of areas, and I feel like if it came down to it, I'd probably put maybe a Georgia. I'm just not a fan of Clemson this year. I don't know what it is. I just think that they don't pass the eye test. I mean, Alabama, you saw, even went out to her for the second half, still played well. You know, it wasn't a close game. Clemson plays close games this year, and Trevor Lawrence is playing, like, very relaxed. Once again, he doesn't care, so that really concerns me.
I've noticed that, too. He kind of has that, I don't know, like you said, I don't know how to put it, but, like, he doesn't really care if he plays well or not, and yeah, just kind of nonchalant on the field.
I don't know if either of you saw this. I saw this online today with Trevor Lawrence. I guess he gave a presentation in a speech class.
Oh,
and
I didn't see this. Hold on.
His topic was how he gets his hair to look the way it does. But underneath it said, by Trevor Touchdown Jesus Lawrence. So I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's funny, but I mean, it seems very arrogant. And he may be joking. I don't know him, so it's hard. I don't want to judge the guy, but that just seems so arrogant.
Touchdown Jesus.
So if anyone else wants to add anything to any games last week before we move on to this week's games, speak now or forever hold your thoughts, whatever that phrase is at weddings.
I think you might have butchered it, but
that's why I'm not a pastor.
Yeah. I think it's speak now or forever hold your peace.
Yeah. Well, see, this guy's been to weddings before.
Yeah, we haven't.
Well, I'm married, so.
So you have much more experience than we do.
Right.
You had up-close experience with that, then, and we haven't. So we'll talk about next week's games. We'll talk about the big game first, Ohio State, Penn State. That is at Ohio State. John, I'll let you start this one off. What are your thoughts going into it? I'll let you know Ohio State opens up at 18.5-point favorites.
All right, so this is going to be the most I don't know how to explain this one, but I think it's either going to be a very close game or an Ohio State blowout. Because I think if Sean Clifford is on, maybe Penn State can – they have Noah Kane back, who's a very good running back for them. They feed him a lot, and they're very good on offense when he's around. Also, K.J. Hamler, but he's going to be matched up against Jeffrey Okuda for Ohio State. So I think that's going to be a good matchup. And if Ohio State's defense – can get pressure, I feel like it'll be a blowout for them.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I just don't see. By the way, does an 11 a.m. kickoff not suck for that game? Why can that not be the primetime game? I know it's probably TV.
All the primetime games this year have been like kind of
second rate to what they generally are. This has primetime written all over it, and it's 11 a.m. But anyway, that's a side note.
Last week, not to go back to last week, because I know we're supposed to forever hold our peace, but Baylor, Oklahoma,
hold your thoughts, actually.
That 28-point comeback, that was like a noon game, wasn't it? Or no, that was 7:30.
Yeah, that was prime time, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. I was going to say that should have been
a few weeks ago. Game. Like I thought LSU-Alabama should have been a primetime game.
Yeah, CBS butchered that one.
I
felt like 2 weeks ago there were a lot of games that should have been on later in the day that were like Penn State shouldn't have been. Like if you were going to make Alabama that 3:30 start, then make the Penn State Minnesota game at 8. You know,
right.
I felt the scheduling was very stupid the way they did that.
Well, the reason the Alabama LSU game was at 2:30 is CBS, their deal with the SEC, they only get to do one primetime game a season on CBS, and they chose the Notre Dame-Georgia game from earlier in the year as their primetime game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the reason why the Alabama-LSU game was at 2:30.
Really?
And so, just like a little side note, it had nothing to do with football, because I keep forgetting that you're in a different time zone than us.
Right.
So when you were just talking about the Penn State game being at 11, I was like, they moved it to an 11 o'clock start? That's got to be something fishy. And then I remembered, we're an hour ahead of you.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Wait, what's this in time zone?
I'm in Central.
Really?
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing.
So Stacey, what are your thoughts on this game this week with the Penn State, Ohio State?
I kind of feel the same way. Depending on which Penn State shows up, it can be a really tight game, or But I'm honestly leaning towards a what'd you say the spread was?
18.5.
I can see Ohio State covering that. Honestly, I don't see Penn State having enough on offense to hang enough points to keep it that close against Ohio State. I think Chase Young is going to be coming back with some vengeance after being suspended for his two games. So I think Ohio State makes that cover, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you guys said. I don't see Penn State walking into the shoe and really holding Ohio State close. Although last time I did say that I didn't see a game being close was the Penn State Minnesota game. So I could be wrong again.
I'll be honest with you, if it was in Happy Valley, I might feel a little differently because that is a big time home field advantage. And if it was at night in Happy Valley, that's about the only way I see Penn State getting the upset.
Yeah, this week. Yeah, home field advantage in this game with both teams is such an advantage on either way. So, like, Ohio State has the home field advantage right now at home, and Penn State would have it just as much if they were home.
Right, right.
This is a true home field advantage game for either side.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking down the schedule, and I just noticed that this week, and it makes sense, this week is the SEC's Cupcake Week. They play all the but you know what? I'm not going to say anything bad because they don't do it early in the year. So they just do it later in the year. Everyone else does it. But Alabama's a 57-point favorite against Western Carolina.
Does Alabama cover?
What, 57? I don't see him covering 57. That's a lot.
Hammer the under. Alabama expert says they don't cover.
I see the game being like 50, oh. 55-7. So that's not covering. So
listen. So if they don't
one thing
cover,
I did find interesting. I'll let you finish on because this is pretty stupid on my part.
Say, yeah, this is gonna be stupid too. But I'm just gonna say, Stacey, if they don't cover and I win any money from now on, you will be referred to as Alabama insider / expert.
Well, I'm not gonna hold my breath, and you shouldn't either.
Oh, I'll say one of the things I look at when I look at games over unders is like with the spread. So Alabama is a 57-point favorite, and the over under in that game is 61. So they're accounting for Western Carolina to essentially not score.
Right.
At all.
They're a pretty they're an FCS team, and they're like one of the worst FCS teams.
Yeah.
So
it's
not gonna be. Yeah, it's not going to be very pretty.
So I'm just looking through. I know there's a couple good West Coast games. I know Oregon plays Arizona State.
That's a sneaky good game.
It is a sneaky game. That's one of those. That could be another trap game for Oregon. Oregon's had a few games that we've considered trap games that they've ended up pulling out so far. So let's see if they can keep that run of things going. We'll talk about Oregon a little later on. Oklahoma TCU, that is. Well, no, we'll talk about Oregon. We'll talk about the rankings.
Okay.
So the other game that just caught my eye was Oklahoma TCU, because TCU is, even though they are 5-5, I feel like they're also one of those teams that could beat anybody on any given day. Not anybody, but especially in that conference.
Right.
And for the Big 12's sake, they need Oklahoma to win out.
Yes. Baylor's not getting in. I mean, Baylor will not get in, regardless of what happens. So
yeah,
they really need Oklahoma to win out.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then I'm looking around. There's really nothing else that really catches my eye.
Hey, a sneaky good game in the SEC is Georgia and Texas A&M.
That did pass my eyes. Yeah,
because like I talked earlier, Georgia's other than DeAndre Swift on offense, they don't have any explosive playmakers. Jimbo Fisher's kind of due a big win at Texas A&M. He hadn't really had one yet. So I'm not saying Texas A&M is going to win, but I think that's a sneaky good game. Georgia's just coming off that.
That should be a good matchup. I like A&M.
Yeah, I think they're definitely trending upward. So that's a bad sign for Alabama because they're in the same division as the SEC. But
right, so if we have nothing else for this week, we'll talk about the rankings, which there weren't any changes in the rankings in the big parts, at least.
Which is baloney. Top
7. I do agree with you. I thought there should have been one change, but we'll talk about it real quick. I thought that Oregon should have jumped into five, and they should have flip-flopped with Bama the way it is now. I think it should have been Bama 6, Alabama 5. I mean, Alabama 6, Oregon 5.
I think we should have been 4. I think Georgia has a worse loss than us. But
I'll agree with that, too.
I think I'd even put Alabama in front of Georgia because Alabama has a better loss than Georgia does.
Yeah, that's my only problem with the rankings right now is how I think Oregon and Alabama are you can split hairs either way on that, but Georgia should not be above either one of them teams.
That's how I feel. If Alabama was 4 and Oregon was 5, I'd be happy. If Georgia should not be in front of both of us.
I mean, they lost at home to South Carolina. That's almost an unforgivable loss.
To a third string quarterback.
Right. Yeah. Right, that's almost an unforgivable loss. So, I mean, it's different to lose to LSU or to you or to Auburn than to lose to South Carolina.
That's, and plus, that was week one, so we were still like ironing out some kinks. Like
absolutely.
And that's kind of one of the things I just wanted to bring up. I feel like this is one of the flaws we see with the committee is they don't look at losses as, in my opinion, I don't think they look at losses as a good loss or a bad loss. They look at the timing of the loss more than anything. Because I do agree with what both of you just said. Alabama and Oregon both have better losses than the Georgia loss. But I think because the Georgia loss happened earlier than I guess those, and we saw it last year with Michigan. Michigan had the loss early in the year, and they were in the playoffs when I think the first one came out. They were in that 4 spot.
Right.
So I think that's one of the flaws that we do see in the playoff rankings.
Yeah, there's many flaws with the playoff, but I would not want that job, to be honest with you. It's easy to do it, you know, sitting on the couch, but to have Georgia ahead of Oregon and Alabama, I think is a joke, considering who Georgia lost to.
So now I wanted to talk about this regardless of who we had on me. I had this in my head originally starting last week when these rankings came out. Let's say the rankings stay the way they are until championship weekend. So you'll have LSU playing Georgia in the SEC championship game. And then let's just assume Clemson and Ohio State both win their respective conferences. Okay. Just for hypothetical situations here, let's say Georgia beats LSU. Do you see the committee, either of you, still putting 2 SEC teams in with Georgia being an SEC champ?
I don't know.
It'd be hard to leave. It would really be hard to leave either. I mean, which one would you choose to leave out?
That's where my – I think I would probably have to put both in if I was in that spot because LSU has so many good wins.
Especially if Georgia's already in the 4 spot. And LSU, if we can assume that LSU is at the 1 spot at that time, I mean, are you going to drop LSU out of the top 4 for losing to the 4th team? So that's the predicament that the committee's putting themselves in. That's why I think they're better off they could cover their asses more if they had Georgia outside of the top 4 right now.
Because you could make a bigger excuse. Like, say Georgia was 6. And they beat LSU, then you could drop LSU out, and it would still be a big deal, but it'd be an easier argument than being like, all right, well, they lost to the 6th best team in the country, instead of being like, well, they lost to a top 4 team also.
Right. I mean, that's I would feel bad for Oregon if they went out, if that's the case. Because, to be honest with you, they're probably not getting in.
Be the Pac-12 champ, you know, either them or Utah.
Right.
So it's going to be one of those teams who get left out, and I think that would be a terrible situation because I think either one of those teams should be playing in the college football playoffs, in my opinion.
See, another flaw with the playoff system is how much emphasis do they put on conference champions? Because if that was really one of the main factors, then they need to have more than 4 teams. I'm not saying they should go to more than 4 teams. But if winning your conference is a big deal to the committee, then they should have it. They should have 6 teams. That way, all Power 5 conferences get in plus 1 at-large bid. I mean, to me, you have to. They have to make the decision of what's most important.
Yeah, and I agree with what you just said. That's all. Six has always been my magic number with the Power Five champs, and then an at large. And I mean, you were just talking about the conference champion. I mean, we saw a few years ago Alabama didn't even play in the SEC championship game, and they got in over an Ohio State team that I believe won the Big Ten.
Right.
So, you know, now the committee gets put in a spot, and it seems more times than not they make a poor decision.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that.
Yeah, they're going to have to make their decision on how much emphasis they're putting on the conference champion.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it for a while when people ask us, you know, how big should they expand the playoffs to? And I've always said six, I think, is a really good number. I don't think six is too much. I think 8 or 16 would be entirely too much.
I agree.
I don't think, and everyone says about the FCS playoffs with the way that works. That's a 2014 playoff, I believe.
Right.
But, I mean, the money from FBS to FCS is astronomically different.
Correct. I like the 4-team playoff personally, but it does make more sense to have 6 if we're going to remain with the Power Five conferences like we have it right now. Or we could divide the conferences up and not really have conference championship games.
Gives it like a true algorithm.
Right.
Yeah, I think right, my match number is 4 too.
Yeah, I think 6 would be okay. I think 8 is too big. I mean, I said this from the beginning, like, I think a 1-8 matchup more years than not isn't going to be.
Who's eight right now?
Penn State.
Yeah, LSU right now would destroy Penn State. Like, I mean, what I'm saying is that really worth a playoff? I mean, who's going to watch that game other than LSU or Penn State fans? I mean, truthfully, because it's not going to be that close of a game. It's going to be much like the Penn State Ohio State game to me this Saturday. So. I don't know. That's why I think 8 is too many. I could live with 6, but I'm pretty happy with 4. Of course, it's easy to say that when your team's been in every playoff so far.
Yeah, I haven't gotten one look at the playoffs. So
I have.
Yeah, luckily, John has. He has Oregon to fall back on. All right, so last thing we're going to talk about, I'm not sure if anyone saw the tweet we tweeted out earlier today. I asked the question, if you can make a coaching staff, just simple head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator of current assistant coaches, who would it be? And one of the guidelines was, one, it had to be an assistant coach, but the assistant coach could have been at one time a head coach. So a guy like Butch Jones or Steve Sarkisian, you can use them now because they're not current head coaches. So I know me and John had our list. We kind of put Stacy on the spot when he got on the podcast. We kind of hit him with the, hey, Stacy, we're going to talk about this. Get your answer going. So I'll let Stacy go last unless he has one ready for us.
Hey, I'm ready. I am ready.
All right. Yeah, go at it.
My head coach, you just mentioned him, is Steve Sarkisian. My offensive coordinator is Joe Brady, and my defensive coordinator is Brent Venables.
Very two out of three SEC guys. One Pac-12 guy, I guess, but SEC guy kind of.
Right.
And I texted John this when I first tweeted. I just want to talk about his real quick. I told John earlier, I said, I'm going to not use Venables because I know a lot of the replies would be Venables. So I tried to stay away from Brent Venables, even though he is, if you're going to make a staff of assistants, he is the Bill Belichick of assistant coaches right now.
Right. Yep.
All right. So my staff was at head coach. I had Dave Aranda, LSU, as a defensive coordinator. My defensive coordinator was also Brent Venables, and my offensive coordinator was Graham Harrell, the USC's offensive coordinator.
Pretty solid.
And I tell you what, I thought about Harrell too when I was originally making my list. Harrell was someone who came to mind, but I ended up going with, this was my lineup. I started, my head coach was Jim Levitt, which I wasn't sure about Levitt because he's technically, I'm pretty sure he's an analyst. He's not a coordinator right now. So I put him on the list. I think Jim Levitt is my head coach. My offensive coordinator is a Saban prodigy with Lane Kiffin.
Yes.
I think Kiffin throughout time has shown that he is a great offensive coordinator. And then my defensive coordinator was kind of a little crazy pick, especially from the conference it's in, Alex Grinch from Oklahoma.
Hey, he's... I think he's done pretty decent with Oklahoma's defense. They're not great, but they're much improved from what they were last year.
Oh, yeah, that's what, true, I will say is when I talked about Grinch, I'll just make this point before, because I know you're going to say something about Grinch. I just want to throw this at you. When he showed up at Washington State, they were the 101st defense in the country. And by the time he had left, they were the 29th. And he took over Oklahoma in the same situation at 101 last year. And then now they're 36th. So he's obviously a guy who shows improvements.
No, absolutely.
You're right.
I mean, there were a lot of guys on this list who, like, of assistants who were, you know, pretty, you could have taken them. Yeah, I mean, I thought John was going to take Butch Jones. I even thought about taking Butch Jones.
That wouldn't be a bad choice if you surrounded him with the right coordinators.
See, if Rutgers are listening, they should hire Butch Jones.
If I was Rutgers, I would rather have Butch Jones right now than Greg Schiano. I know y'all don't want to get into that right now, but I really believe that I think Butch Jones is a good enough coach to, you know, to be at Rutgers for 10 or 12 years and, you know, get you to some bowl games and, you know, maybe throw in a 9-win season every once in a while. I believe that.
He could stabilize the program because he's a big believer in, like, the champions of life and, like, recruiting guys with 5-star hearts. Like, he can clean up a program.
Right.
Yeah.
I have my feelings about Butch.
Well,
I'll make my quick Butch Jones point. And what you just said about Butch, both of you, what you said about Butch, about him being a great recruiter, yeah, that's correct. He at Tennessee, I think he had 2 top 10 classes. But I think at the end of the day, you aren't judged on your recruiting. His third year at Tennessee, after 2 really good years, that was a undisciplined team. I mean, there were stupid penalties in that game. Even the 2 years that they were good, they were disciplined. They weren't disciplined, and they ended up losing games because of it. Like, they should have played in the SEC championship game against Alabama one of the years when they lost to Florida at, like, a last-moment kind of play.
Yep.
I think that was set up by penalty. So I think there's a lot of times where Butch does a really good job getting guys into the program, getting them on campus, you know, getting them to play for Tennessee or, you know, whatever school he's at. But I think as a coach, there's a lot to be desired with him.
Well,
yeah, I think that doesn't just start at Tennessee.
I'll say this, and I don't mean to be disrespectful or anything, but, like, it's different coaching
nothing
at Tennessee
you can say than
at Rutgers. I think it's a totally different to coach at Tennessee than at Rutgers. I think he has more of a Rutgers style of coaching than a Tennessee style of coaching. Like, it takes a certain
is that
type
a nice
of person.
Way of saying he has a losing style of coaching?
No. I mean, you've seen what he done at Central Michigan and then at Cincinnati. Those are, I mean, I would say Cincinnati's pretty close to, or, you know, right around what Rutgers is. He went 4-8, 10-3, and 9-3. I mean, I just feel like he's probably built more for that type of job than, I mean, Tennessee is a big time job. I mean, so it's I think it takes a certain type of coach to coach at a major school.
SEC school, yeah.
Not even an SEC school. Yeah, like Tennessee, Alabama, school. LSU, Oklahoma, Ohio
USC.
State. USC. I think it takes a certain type of coach.
No, you're right about
and
that.
And I will say, my problem. You did make a good point.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna make a rebuttal to what Stacey just said about Central Michigan and Cincinnati, because I did bring this up when we originally talked about it. My only argument to back that would be when he took over both of those positions, he followed Brian Kelly.
Correct. He did.
So when he left, when Brian Kelly left Central Michigan, he got that job towards the end of before he left Central Michigan, you know, they were on the downward when he went to Cincinnati with Brian Kelly's guys. And then they were kind of on the, you know, lower side when he left again. So that again leads me to believe that maybe he's a great recruiter, but as a coach, he leaves a lot to be desired.
Hey, yeah, I think it's a fair point though, to think that you know, maybe he does lack in the coaching area, because I mean, when Butch Jones left Cincinnati his last season, they were 12-0. And then Butch Jones' first season, they went 4-8 in Cincinnati. So, I mean, I don't know how much they lost. I can't. I mean, that's been 10 years ago, so it's
it's hard
to remember what they lost. But and you know they did bounce back to go 10-3 the next year. So, but I can see your concerns because I did see the lack of discipline that his teams had at Tennessee. So that I could see that as cause for concern, but. I guess my other kind of point would be like, well, who else are you really legitimately going to be able to get at Rutgers right now?
No, I agree.
That's my point, especially because like you said that Butch can get guys on campus, which he can, and even if they're undisciplined, Shiano had guys on campus and going to the NFL. You know, NFL stars, Eli Apple, Von Bell, you know, all these Ohio State guys, Marshawn Lattimore. And his defenses were declining at when he left Ohio State.
Yeah, that's a fair point, too.
Yeah, no, it is a fair point. I mean, there's pros and cons to each of them.
Offense. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a saying down here in the South, and I'm sure y'all get a kick out of this. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And what that means is there's always multiple rebuttals to different, you know, problems or, you know, any kind of situation you're looking at. So, you know, there's more than one way to look at this right now. And it's that the Rutgers job is one of those jobs that it's going to take the right person. And I, you know, obviously it's not fair for me to say who the right person is because I'm not anywhere near that program right now. So
yeah, we weren't blessed with Nick Saban.
No, yeah. You're right. Hey, we are very fortunate.
Now, just a quick question before we wrap it up here. I don't know how old you are, but were you alive for the Bear Bryant?
No, I'm not near that old. I think Bryant's last year was 81, 82. I was born in 89, so I wasn't quite around for that.
But just one more question about that, kind of just going off that. Oh, how do people like feel about Finebaum in the South? Like, are you guys like, do you listen to him or?
I try to, but. When he starts instigating things, it's hard for me to listen to it. So now, when he was in Birmingham before he moved to the SEC Network, it was a much better show. I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't know what changed, and he claims nothing's changed since he went there. But I'm sorry, when you go from working out of a Birmingham studio to an SEC Network studio, things are going to change. And the show's not what it used to be, so it's. But he's always been an instigator, and I'm not much on instigating things. So he's okay some days. Some days I can tolerate him, some days I can't. So, but and I would say most people in Alabama and in the South kind of feel that way. But there's a lot of fans that can't turn away from it. They got to listen to it.
Yeah, I actually listen to it sometimes just for his points because – I feel like he's one of those people whose SEC bias really shows at times. But
I
expect that he just doesn't care. He just lets it, like.
You know, that's true. He does not care.
All right, Stacey. So that'll do it for this week. Stacey, thank you again for coming on. If you guys haven't listened to his podcast, go over Tide Talk Podcast, especially if you're a Southern guy, especially if you live in Alabama, go over and listen to him. Thanks for coming to our little world with Rutgers and getting to kind of feel a little bit of our pain.
Hey, guys, I appreciate y'all having me on, and I hope we can do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys, we'll see y'all.